Thanks very much, Simon and Nick, for what I'm sure you'll agree, as a recovering lawyer, I'm sure you'll agree that, I certainly think that that's far more engaging than most of the MCLE things I've ever been to, which I usually only attended for the free food. I won't acknowledge the traditional owners. I'm sure they're feeling very acknowledged at the moment. But I would like to acknowledge Pilch, one of my favourite non-government organisations, mainly my favourite because they sound like a rude verb. Pilching sounds like the sort of thing you'd expect Alan Jones to be caught doing in a London urinal. But and I don't really see my role as a moderator of this discussion. I'm hoping it'll be kind of an inflamer and to try and just lower the intellectual tone, a task that I feel peculiarly qualified to do. And I would just like, instead of acknowledging the traditional owners, to acknowledge my first employer as a law firm, Blake Dawson Waldron, from whom I got many things, mostly stationery, to be fair, but also a few things that I've used along the way. We've got about half an hour to engage in a pretty freewheeling and open discussion that I would really like to involve you guys in. Jade and Mish are standing around the place. That's Mish over there and Jade on the other side. So if you'd like to ask a question, just raise your hand. They'll come over to you with the microphone and we'll have a bit of a chat. You're most welcome to do that anytime starting from now. But while we're waiting for that to happen, I thought I'd just make one comment, which I think emerged as a theme from both Nick and Simon's talks, and maybe open up a question to anyone here and to you guys. The theme of both those talks seemed to me to be risk. The willingness to take big risks where you don't know the answer, but where you're just willing to give it a go. And I've got to say, in my, for want of a better expression, career, moving away from law and the way you think as a lawyer has been very much about learning how to take risks. Because I think, and I suspect it's not true necessarily of people in this room, because I think this is probably a self-selecting group of the exceptions who prove the rule of law, for want of a better expression. But I think that there might be a problem in the legal profession, which is a culture of risk aversion and narrowed thinking and a preponderance to think about the worst possible results as a way of not taking action. And I think Simon's point is really interesting. It was incredibly engaging to see that quite dramatic legal victory that GetUp had during the election campaign. And why don't we have more of it? Why, you know, and it's interesting that it kind of happened as a result. It was like the last step in a process of trying to conduct more conventional social change. So do you guys agree, Fiona, do you guys agree that there is a problem in the way we train our lawyers to be not cognizant of risk, because that's really sensible, but risk averse, which I think can be a problem?
Is it on? Am I on? I'm going to jump in. I seem to have grabbed this first. I think no. I'm not a lawyer, but when I turn to lawyers, as I do every second day, for legal advice, I'm not looking for someone to push me to take risk. I'm looking for someone to talk me down out of my crazy idea, or to at least tell me what I'm actually risking in the first place.
Yeah, or take the risk more cleverly.
Exactly, a more informed risk. I don't think it's, and I could be wrong, but I don't think the role of lawyers is to push clients to take risk. I think it's to offer an understanding of what you're actually risking, what your chances might be, which is the eternal client question, which always gets a non-answer, and therefore leave it to the client to be taking more risks or to other organisations. So there is something going on, but I don't think it's necessarily lawyers who need to change to solve it.
I certainly agree with that, by the way. Obviously, you can't... Well, I mean, you can get instructions if you really want them. But, you know, you can't tell your clients how to act. But I do think that... Where the legal profession works best, it's when people are being genuinely inventive, creative, in ways that we're not necessarily trained to do, and that it should be extended beyond the realms of tax avoidance by trying to think of new ways to agitate social issues. And I wonder a lot of the time whether we're wasting the resources of some of our best legal minds by limiting that a little bit. But Nick, do you have any comments there?
I agree with you.
So yeah, right. Good. Get stuck into each other.
Fight here and encourage you.
Do I get to respond?
I think there's. I just agree for a couple of reasons. One is that I think if I want legal advice, I want exactly what you said. But I think I'm not talking to lawyers, and I think we are a different group. You know, so I'm thinking you're right about the self-selecting group. But when, I think I do want lawyers to not. We use quite a lot of lawyers in our business, and obviously you used a lot of lawyers when the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence. I don't think I want. I'm bored of the conversation that you often have with lawyers, which is that my business, you know, my day-to-day job is really not giving me anything, and I want to go and give back. I mean, Pilcher's whole life is about that. So I kind of think to myself, well, why is that? You know, why is it that there isn't a strategy within your business? Why isn't it that you don't sit down? I mean, I sit down in my business, and you know, we decide what it is we're about as a business, and we don't do anything that isn't mass action on climate change. Now, it has to do some other things. One of the things it has to do is be profitable because nobody gives us any money. But we decide where we're going to place ourselves every single day. We're strategic about it, we're clear about it, and therefore we don't do shit things every day that dumb our mind. We never do shit things that dumb our mind. And yet, I speak to so many lawyers that say, you should be in my place. It's hard to get creative when you're doing what I'm doing every day. Then why are you there? I mean, I think that's, so I want to go, yes, if I'm coming to you and I want this, I want you to numb me down and get me out of my crazy tree. But actually, I want to know which lawyer, which company to go to that actually on a daily basis is reflecting about the contribution they want to place in the world and the kind of work that they want. And I think that's what I don't see.
Which seems like a perfect opportunity for me to plug my wife's book, The Pinstripe Prison, about the culture of law firms and professional agencies. But do we have a question? Yes.
Yes. Hi, I'm Evelyn. I just want to kind of make a comment about the kind of chicken and egg scenario. I was involved in starting the Human Rights Arts and Film Festival because I wanted to try and make human rights something that's mainstream, something that people talk about, because what I found was that people in Australia didn't really talk about human rights except for the little tiny group of lawyers at law school and, you know, who read it in books, usually from another country. And so I thought the only way to kind of get the mainstream talking about it was to start a festival and use film and art to communicate human rights issues to a broader audience. Hopefully that would inspire people to learn about human rights, and then when the question eventually came up in Parliament, as it has already, whether we should have a Human Rights Act, that it might push politicians to act in a certain way and actually implement human rights legislation, so that there is more opportunities for lawyers to actually be creative with the law and protect human rights through the law. It hasn't worked yet. And I'm finding it's quite difficult to figure out where should you start to try and keep that dialogue happening. You know, I suppose it's kind of, you know, you try to go through the traditional parliamentary means, the parliamentary processes, doesn't kind of work, go through the kind of education means, that takes a very long time, is very hard to measure, and then you're kind of still in the law and the law is quite closed. So I suppose I just wanted to kind of hear your comments on that type of direction.
Guys, any comments?
I got to say thank you very much to you, first of all, because this year you showed my brother's film, so he was very grateful. I got to auction some things for you. I think part of the point here is not that you in this room don't do those things or go to Pilch or aren't great and creating a really good opportunity. I think you are. I think the point is slightly a tougher one for you, in my view, which is what other things, you know, go back to that young woman on the steps, you know, is she dead? And could we have had a case that means that she isn't dead? I mean, and it wouldn't be, how difficult would it be for five of you to get together and actually say, as you did, hold on, there must be some things in here that actually people are not getting their rights, and we could put together a class action, and we'll go down to the Drug and Counseling Centre and say, can you get me three really good-looking plaintiffs that can speak, you know, in a way that's understood and will be not drugged up on the day that I need them? And if they say, yes, we can, why aren't you using your skill? I wrote a book. I bought it because it's called The End of Charity. So, you see, we're talking about charity. I'm actually not interested in your charity, although it's very, a very valuable place for you to learn. I'm actually interested in your bloody skills as lawyers, because that's where the contribution might best be. Now, it is extraordinary that in your spare time you want to go and create an art festival. I mean, great. What a great way to be around, and, you know, thanks for the gig. But, you know, what are you doing as lawyers during the day? So it's a tougher question.
Fiona, did you have a comment on that?
Just my quick comment is that I think that the work of the Arts Festival and others is incredibly important. I think lawyers have a role to play in talking Simon off the ledge, but I think that we also can be very risk averse, and the reason why you don't get more lawyers doing the kind of stuff that Nick's exhorting us to is because we train ourselves away from that kind of thinking. So I do think, back to Julian's initial premise, it is something about the way we train law students. It's certainly about the way that the legal environment pushes you to think once you get into it. It's the fact that we talk to ourselves all the time about this kind of stuff and not to anybody else. We're never forced to try and communicate these ideas outside of our own cohort, and we're no different to any other professional group in that respect. But it's why I think the Arts Festival is so, so important, and please don't stop doing it. We really do need to get people to see that this is not stuff that just excites lawyers, but is actually really important to the kind of community that we want to be a part of and the kind of world we want to be part of.
And the more people who are self-starting, doing original, inventive things that may or may not work, the more people that are doing that increases the chances that there are going to be some spectacular successes, which may change the world, and even the failures are glorious. Any other questions or comments? It is working.
My name's Liz Carr, and I'm the director of the West Heidelberg Community Legal Services, which is in one of the poorest postcodes in Victoria/Australia. And Fiona's stolen my thunder a bit, because I was going to actually say that. I actually do agree with your comment, Julian, in that I think as an ex-law academic for about 7.5 years in a university, I think that the law students are very much taught the operation of the law within the framework that the law is set, the set often by power. And that as they go into private practice, having been in private practice in a commercial firm myself, they are trained to work within the operation of the world, the law, and to see it narrowly and to look at risk and to often advise about risk. What I think that law schools need to do, and I know that there's an initiative by Chief Justices of the courts here, is to look at statutory interpretation more so that people start to look at the potential of the law rather than being slaves to the operation of the law, and look at how you can use the framework of the law to actually challenge. And I think that's something that I don't think a lot of the deans of the law schools have yet gotten. But the other thing that I wanted to reinforce was, I think, the point about collaboration. I was talking to a peak agency the other day, and they said that their staff work all the time in areas where there are clearly test cases, but they wouldn't know how to identify them. And that suggests a really important point about legal literacy and the importance of training non-legal people about how to identify what might be strategic, what might be a good test case. And I've been doing that work with the Charter of Human Rights in Victoria, just picking up on your point, Nick, where I've been working with doctors, nurses, OTs, physios, counsellors, drug and alcohol workers, to educate them about the Charter and how they can use it at a grassroots level to broker better outcomes with local authorities. So that's an example of using the law and working in collaboration with other people. And I think all professions, doctors are a classic example of working within their sphere, and lawyers do it too. But we need to actually open up, I think, those channels of communication, learn from each other and work in partnership to change the world. And I think that Fiona's point about collaboration is really critical to that happening.
Thanks very much. Any comments up here on that, or...
Just to really quickly say, I mean, I agree with you, but the ironic thing about this conversation is that those lawyers who are paid the most, i.e. senior counsel and QCs, are the ones who are creative and focus their time on interpretations and not just on narrow statutes. So the market is actually helping us in some way here by paying those people the most. There must be something going right in all of this.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, a lot of legal reform. When I was an industrial lawyer, I used to brief into HB Higgins Chambers in Sydney, and that's a bunch of industrial lawyers who are very good at what they do, and they would literally sit around, presumably over 10 or 20 beers at the end of a year, and think, okay, what's going to be the next big test case that we're going to run? And that was a collaborative environment in a very old kind of traditional bar structure, but in both senses of the word. But certainly, a lot of social progress has occurred through techniques like that and by tossing ideas around. Maybe people should... maybe the title of this seminar, which I momentarily forgot, should actually be the title of a course at law school. Up the back there, was something? Yeah.
I just was going to say... Erasure Harad, sorry. I was going to say, I'm not sure that I agree with the interpretation that lawyers are trained necessarily to be risk-averse.
Well, then sit down. I'm not interested. Sorry.
I mean, I think that's certainly part of our training, but I also think one of the things that fascinated me, and I worked at a big firm, so I worked at Mallesons, and certainly there are a lot of risk-averse lawyers in that environment. But there was also something that struck me in that environment that particularly in the time of issues like Tampa, there was a basic understanding that things were being done that weren't in accordance with the basic tenets of law or our concept of what justice should be. And this was something that came from the most conservative lawyers in practice, as well as people who probably considered themselves more independent thinkers. And sometimes to achieve change, it's bringing the conservative people along on the journey and getting them to support you in the big test cases.
Oh, so, for example, I totally agree. I mean, Julian Burnside's career transformation is a classic example of that.
Yeah,
you probably want the highly paid technical black letter lawyer to run your human rights case.
Absolutely. And Julian Burnside's a classic example of someone who claims he was a big C conservative, and when he was watching the news and watching the Tampa case on television unfold, he couldn't sit there and accept what was happening in all good conscience. And I think that's something we forget. You know, it's wonderful to be in a room of people who might be like-minded, but there's a lot of people who may not necessarily identify with some of these principles, but they still believe that the basics of law and the basics of justice mean that causes need to be served.
Good comment. Yep.
You're going to go?
I was going to agree and just say that's one of the secrets, which is now no longer a secret, about what Pilch does, is that sometimes we get to transform not just the lives of the clients we work with, but also the lives of the lawyers who do that work. And I see that on a regular basis, where a lawyer who would otherwise have no contact with the reality of injustice, being confronted with that, and not just confronted and walk on, but actually have to get beside that client and help them navigate something that's really unjust or unfair or just wrong. And it challenges the way they think, and they have to kind of recalibrate somewhere. And that's one of the great joys, frankly, of my job. And I think, as I say, that the secret really of what Pilch is all about in many ways.
In that sense, I suppose Pilch is providing a more constructive form of midlife crisis for commercial lawyers, rather than just getting divorced, buying a Porsche and marrying your secretary. Okay, does that lower the tone enough? I think that's good, quite good. Did you want to make a comment?
I sort of want to say sorry and then beat you again. So the sorry is, you know, I get it that you're here because you care about it. I get that you do care about it. I guess the point is that the reason that you put this on the agenda, the reason I've not had a conversation with a lawyer yet, probably with the exception of Julian, that says every single day is about change for me, and unless I'm doing that, I'm not doing it. The reason this is here as a title is because it isn't happening. It's not, you know, it's not like So we don't have to be defensive about that. I'm sure you're different, okay? But we don't have to, I don't think there's any need to be defensive. You are not making the change that is possible, that is afforded to you under the law. Now, that, you don't have to, that's fine. But we're not, and the profession isn't, I think, doing all that it can. And I think in terms of why, is I actually think part of the problem is where law in this country resides, and it's as a route to power and control. And I had the most frightening hour of my life. I do a lot of public speaking, and the worst gig I ever got in my life was speaking to Freehills lawyers. And Freehills...
That's pretty bad. That's actually a contention in the Human Rights Charter, I think.
Freehills put on a gig for their top... You know, whatever it's, you know, in your first 3 years, whatever you're called then, you know. They put on a gig once a year and they bring them down. They brought them down to Melbourne. They put them up, they shacked them up for a couple of days. Am I speaking to anyone that was there when I spoke to them? I just love somebody to say, yes, it was true. And the head of Freehills got up and said, look, we are going to have a conversation about ethics. And it was about 2 days of ethics. And it was about saying, you are our best, but actually we want our best to actually have a place in society and to be able to think about how they're going to use the privilege of being one of the, you know, premier legal firms in the country. So that's the start. I stand up by going, okay, so I want to know how many of you can tell the truth. Because I'm thinking that's an interesting concept, because certainly if my son was in a situation where he was having to face a lawyer and some help, I'd want somebody with empathy that could actually get in there and see, not just somebody that had a position, you know, whatever, but somebody who had empathy. So I would like to know how many of you can tell the truth. So I'm going to put my hand, I've got a really strong position, a powerful position, and I've taken drugs. I've smoked marijuana, I tried cocaine once, but I've never stuck a needle in my arm. Anybody here taken drugs? There's 200 people in the room, no one puts up their hands. And I'm going, well, why is no one putting up their hands? You clearly have all done it, you know. So let's not make any recreational drug, you know, you've been at university 3 years out of, you know, anything. Have you taken?
Do ask that question.
Has anybody? No, listen in a second. But so no one puts up their hands. So then the head of Freehills next to me, who's doing the gig, goes, hold on a minute, I'm struggling here. So can I join you and put up my hand? So I'm saying, right, now we're really going. There's Bill Clinton, me, Tony Blair, and your boss is all saying we've done it, right? So clearly it doesn't stop your career. Please, not one person. And I didn't move on to my talk about ethics. I spent an hour walking around saying, is nobody in this room, not one single friggin' lawyer, willing to put up their hand? And the only comments I got, honest to God, an hour, the only smart-ass comments, like, I've got really drunk, stupid person. You know, it's like, is there somebody here that can tell the truth? No. No one in the room, an hour. And as I walked out, as disgusted as I've ever been in any talk, lots and lots of young people came up and said, couldn't say it in there, but of course we have. I'm saying, go away. You know, just because actually, and so I asked the head of the Freehills, and he says it's because many of them think that they are going to be in a position where they are trying to compete to get through the law firm, and they will think somebody else in the room will use the fact that they've taken drugs to actually stop their career going forward. We are in a mess. I think.
Excellent. Yeah. I once had to give I don't even know why I was asked this. I once had to give a security reference for a mate of mine who was applying for DFAT. I don't know why he wanted me as a security reference, but I had to work out what lies he was telling so I could be consistent with him. Yes, we've really got time only for one more question. So.
That's quite a lot of pressure.
It is. And we've probably only got a few minutes, so I have to keep it relatively brief.
Okay, well, my name's Lizzie, and I work at Maurice Blackburn in the social justice practice, and I can confidently say that I love what I do, and every day I feel proud to be doing social justice type work, and I think that that's something that's not just limited to me. It's probably a firm-wide feeling, and I just wanted to contest the assumption that's floating around that it's not possible to have a career that contributes to social justice in the law. I think a lot of community lawyers would share that feeling as well. Maybe what we should be doing is encouraging law students to not see their career as corporate practice with pro bono on the side. Maybe it's becoming a lawyer who is dedicating their life to social justice. And that's one thing that I guess flowed on from the point that I was originally going to make, which was litigation is not always the answer, and it's worked for GetUp and it's been very successful, but often my job is to say you shouldn't be litigating. There's things that you've got to do, but litigation is not the answer. And so maybe what we need is for activist organisations to learn from lawyers, but for lawyers to learn from activist organisations as well and to become activists themselves. We have lots of skills. We can write, we can speak. Most of us can write and speak, depending on what your practice is, but we have all those skills. We should be putting them to good use. We should be intervening into public debates whenever we possibly can, even if we're not acting on the case, and be the watchdog for respect for human rights, respect for ideas of justice and due process. That should be the job of lawyers, in my opinion. And maybe we should be training lawyers to have that as a constant mechanism in their brains, that they are committed to those principles, that it's not good enough to say that you're an advocate and you can take on any case whatsoever, that there are some positions that are wrong and we should be challenging them. And I think the Tampa case is a good example of that. So I'd be interested to know what the panel thinks about those thoughts.
In short, I agree.
So Lizzie and I kind of work together in that I do bring cases to Maurice Blackburn, or I've had conversations, so I can tell you she's telling the truth when she speaks with such passion. I obviously agree. I think what's really important here is the fact that when you get 6 years or whatever it is to become a lawyer of training, what you also get is a set of principles established within you so deep that you're going to believe in them forever. And so we need you to actually be standing up with those principles, because when you speak with authority. In society, we turn to people who can speak with authority to help us move forward in a situation, and lawyers have that authority because they have those principles so well established within them.
And I thank Pilch for creating the opportunity for those of you who do have that to find something meaningful to deliver. I thank those of you who made the choice to go and work in organisations where you can actually do that every day, and thank you for making that choice, and thank you for the contribution you make. I thank those of you who then take the opportunity where you don't have that in every opportunity to go and create art festivals or to create volunteerism or to go and do it in places and find it. So I agree and thank you very much. And though there is more within the profession, probably not well reflected here, look at the average age of the group and then look at the average age of the profession, and that we can do to actually create real and significant change of the type that we've been able to hear about today. And I think, I think that's the thing that I think is really worth us thinking about. How do we move along that?
Yeah, the subtle evangelism of making other lawyers' lives more interesting. Okay, look, unfortunately we've run out of time, and I would say that mainly because we can stop talking and start drinking and eating. But thank you very much to all of you for coming and for engaging in what I've certainly found to be an interesting discussion. Thanks for all our speakers, Nick and Simon, and of course to Fiona and Pilch for organising today's event. Thanks very much, and let's have a drink.